Okay. So, you know, I'm going to do the V column today, of which I know the least, okay? So it's the one which is probably the most interesting, but I least understand it, so it will be a relatively short session. I have relatively little to do, and I'll start by telling you what are V-knotted objects, but even before that, I thought it would be fun to start with a little bit of a prelude. So here it is. From V for Vendetta.
I can assure you I really know how.
Who are you?
Who? Who is the form following the function of what? And what I am is a man in a mask.
Well, I can see that.
Of course you can. I'm not questioning your powers of observation. I'm merely remarking upon the paradox of asking a masked man who he is. But on this most auspicious of nights, permit me then, in lieu of the more commonplace sobriquet, to suggest the character of this dramatis persona. Voila! In view, a humble vaudevillian veteran, cast vicariously as both victim and villain by the vicissitudes of fate. This visage, no mere veneer of vanity, is a vestige of the vox populi, now vacant, vanished. However, this valorous visitation of a bygone vexation stands vivified and has vowed to vanquish these venal and villain vermin, vanguarding vice and vouchsafing the violently vicious and voracious violation of felicity. The only verdict is vengeance, a vendetta, held as a votive, not in vain, for the value and veracity of such shall one day vindicate the vigilant and the virtuous. Verily, this vicious swaz of verbiage fears most verbose, so let me simply add that it's my very good honor to meet you, and you may call me V.
Are you like a crazy person?
I'm quite sure they will say so.
Okay. Sorry, that's all. You know, it explains my interest in V. Okay? But now more seriously, so what are V-knotted objects? So they were mentioned, what are V-knotted objects? They were mentioned a number of times, and I want to quickly go through the definition once again, or at least pretend to go through the definition once again. So, well, you know, there are several definitions. I guess you know, maybe I'll start with what I think was Kaufman's motivation when he introduced it. So, you know, there are many knot invariants that are computed using so-called R matrices. So you label the edges of the knot diagram with some letters, A, B, C, D, E, F, and then roughly speaking, well, not roughly speaking, but around each vertex, you see four, around each crossings, you see four letters. So you consider a so-called R matrix, which is really a matrix with four indices. I mean, more precisely, it's in the tensor product of two endomorphism spaces often. So the four indices come from some places, but for the purpose of this discussion, it's enough to say that it's a matrix of four indices. So so you see you can write a matrix like that around each vertex. So say around this one it will be A D B E. Around the next one it will be R E B F C, E B F C, etc. And then you sum over all indices going from one to some number, whatever it is, and then if you're lucky and if you've chosen the matrix correctly, the result is a not invariant. So the main condition that the matrix has to satisfy is that the product of three copies of the matrix taken one way should be the copy of three copies of the matrix taken another way. So there is some condition of the general form R cubed is equal to R cubed, and this condition is called the Young-Baxter equation. And then usually there is more mess. Usually you have to be a bit careful about what to do with the cups and the caps. And, you know, and there are actually more conditions here because there is also Rademeister 2. Usually there is a bit more mess, but this is the general idea. And in fact, all quantum invariants arise this way. So, unless you count not homology as quantum invariants. So, I mean, the Jones polynomial, Homfli polynomial, the Kaufman polynomial, all the rest, the G2 invariant, whatever, the higher colored Jones polynomial or Homfli polynomial, they all arise in this way. Nothing in this says planarity. Okay? So in some sense, the correct domain space of quantum invariants has nothing to do with knot theory, or at least it so appears. So therefore, Kaufman decided to define a virtual knot to be anything, to be essentially this product left uninterpreted. Modulo these relations. So this product as a symbolic thing, modulo these relations. Okay? So it's the obvious domain space of quantum invariants. Okay? Except that some limitations apply on quantum invariants. There is stuff to do with the caps and the caps, but it's at least the first approximation to the correct domain space of quantum invariants. So hence his definition is symbols of the form crossing A, B, A, D, B, E, crossing E, B, F, C, etc., in which every letter appears twice, and the order of the crossings does not matter, and modulo some simple-minded relations. So that would be definition number zero, and I'm not completing the details because he never presented it this way. I'm just trying to read his mind. Okay? The way he presented it was to say, well, every knot has a so-called Gauss diagram. So this has a Gauss diagram. And Karine mentioned this yesterday, but a Gauss diagram is just the parameter space of the knot along with an arrow going from the top strand to the bottom strand with a sign on it according to the orientation, much like chord diagrams, except it actually represents the topology and not just the double points. Okay, so I think for the trefoil, you'll get something like an arrow going this way, an arrow going the opposite way, an arrow going this way once again, and all with the same sign. Okay? So the next but not all Gauss diagrams come from a planar projection. You can write diagrams of this nature that did not come from a planar graph. So, for example, this Gauss diagram, you can check, does not come from a planar graph. Okay? So, the next definition will be... Oh, sorry. However... What?
Is it true for any sign assignment there?
Yeah. For no sign assignment will it come from a planar graph. In fact, even not for no orientation either. So the thing with one crossing just does not come from a planar graph. The thing with one sort of X. Okay? There are no Well, okay. The only two crossing knot is this one, right? And you can make choices about over, under, okay? But no matter how you choose it, the corresponding Gauss diagram will look like this and not like that. So, okay? So anyway, then you can mod out by, then you can check what the Rademeister relation means, and the Rademeister relation becomes Rademeister 1, which is always negotiable, becomes that if you have an isolated arrow, with doesn't matter which sign, then you can remove it. Rademeister 2 becomes that if you have two parallel arrows going in the same direction with pluses or minus and minus on them, possibly like that, so possibly parallel, but possibly also crossing, but again with opposite signs, then you can cancel them. So this corresponds to the this move like that, where the two things are oriented the same way, and this corresponds to move like that, where the two things are oriented in the opposite way. And of course, when I draw things like that, I mean embed them in a larger skeleton. Okay? And finally, there is a Rademeister 3, which says that 1, 2, 3 is equal to the same thing in the opposite order, 1, 2, 3. Okay? So you just mod out by these relations. It's completely, combinatorial gadget. Okay? Good. Next, and I didn't write the signs here. I think all signs are plus for this version of the Rademeister moves, of the Rademeister move. Okay. Next is my favorite definition, which I will repeat later. I don't know if it's my favorite, one of my favorite definitions, which I will repeat later. It says, look at the circuit algebra with two generators, the overcrossing, actually the undercrossing, and the overcrossing, modulo the usual relations, Rademeister 2 or 3 or 1 as well, negotiable. Okay? So circuit algebra, well, means like planar algebra, but without the word planar. So you can put these things as components in the plane any way you want, and connect the ends via wormhole in the fifth dimension. So combinatorially, okay. So I think I mentioned it before, so I don't think I should mention it again. Now, here is another definition which the topologists like. So, for reason not entirely clear to me. So basically, these are knots drawn on a surface. So here comes the problem. I don't know how to draw knots. But okay. So these are knots drawn on a surface, or if you want, embedded on a surface cross interval, modulo stabilization. Stabilization, which means that you can add or remove empty handles. Okay? So the empty handle does not matter. Okay? So how do you get from here to the previous ones? Well, basically, if you Oh, you know what? Sorry, this has a variant. Maybe I should have done 2.5, or maybe I... Okay, sorry, you know what? Maybe I should have done 3 here and called this 4. So 3 would be the planar algebra generated by, well, overcrossing, undercrossing, and a virtual crossing, modulo the same Rademeister 2 and 3, and also the virtual Rademeister moves 2 and 3, and also the mixed moves where you can slide a virtual strand over a real crossing. Anyway, and the equivalence of the first few is obvious. The equivalence with this one is also obvious, because if you have a diagram, a knot diagram on a surface, in particular, it defines a Gauss diagram in the exact same way as before. Okay? So it's equivalent to all other definitions. Okay? Sorry, so it maps to the other definitions, and it's clearly, this Gauss diagram is clearly independent of adding and removing handles. Okay? Alternatively, if you have a virtual knot diagram, you embed it on a surface by, well, wherever you want to make a virtual crossing, you create a handle for it. Okay? So suppose you want to embed this virtual knot on a surface. You embed these two as you please, and in order to make the virtual crossing, you create a tunnel going from here to here, like under the surface, under the plane, and you let the one side go in the tunnel and the other one go, well, in the plane. And so, sorry, my art is not great, but anyway. And then you can check that the two maps are inverses of each other. A different way of saying stabilization is, or a different way of saying it is to say that you basically don't care about the surface except in the immediate vicinity of the knot. Okay? Because you can add and remove pieces otherwise. Okay. However, nevertheless, from this perspective, Greg Cooperberg proved that I hope I'm saying it precisely enough, but he says that every virtual knot has a unique embedding or unique up to isotopy embedding on a surface of minimal genus. So basically, you know, so if you have a virtual knot and you cut all the handles you possibly could, and it might be hard to tell when you cannot cut any further, okay, then how do I want to say that?
If it cannot be true.
Why? Up to isotopy. So I can still do Rademeister moves on the surface.
Yeah, so well, it depends on how you interpret the statement. There's a unique embedding.
No, what do I want to say? Okay, I want to say, if you have two virtual knots and you know that they're equal as virtuals, and they are embedded on a surface of minimal genus, then there will be an isotopy from one to the other. Wait. Am I... So if you know, if they are embedded on a minimal genus surface and you know that they are isotopic, then they will be, and you know that they're equivalent, then they will be isotopic on that surface. I think
within knots.
Within knots on that surface, yeah. Yeah, I think I'm saying it right. Yeah. Anyway, in particular, ordinary knots, since they are on S2, which has absolute minimum genus, are equivalent as virtual knots if and only if they are equivalent as ordinary knots. So, in other words, U knots inject into V knots. Okay? Okay. Okay, and here is the fifth definition, which might be my current favorite. So, you see, if I don't care about the surface, I think number two is still my favorite, but here is another definition. If I don't care about the surfaces, if I allow myself to add and remove handles, why even bother about the faraway parts of the surface? So it's really knots on a surface, possibly with boundary, modulo, what do I want? Tearing and puncturing. Tearing and puncturing away from the knot. So, in other words, let me give an example. So, so the dashed lines here means, okay, sorry, the surface is this rectangle here or hexagon here. The dashed lines mean that it connects further to other pieces of the surface. Okay, I mean, it's the surface continues, I'm just not continuing to draw it. The solid lines mean part of the boundary. And I guess what I'm saying is that this is equivalent, well, of course, to isotopies, so I could isotope it. I guess I should just have skipped the dashed lines. So I could have isotoped it. Okay? Or I could tear it, so I can cut it in half, cut the surface in half here, and then I will get a piece like this, union a piece like that. So the knot is the curved stuff, and the boundary is the of the surface is the polygonal lines, or I could puncture it. So I could keep the same picture, but make a hole in the surface over here. Okay? So basically I can cut, remove, add, do whatever I want to the surface away from the knot. So the surface actually has no role. It just allows me to decide whether a crossing is positive or negative. So it means that it's essentially empty. Okay. Anyway, so I just mentioned a few definitions. That's all. Okay.
How can you make topological sense of the last equality. It feels like the puncture has precisely the function of preventing this.
No, I mowed out, so if I wanted to do the Rittmeister move, I could seal this. Sorry, I'm modulo puncturing, I mean also modulo sealing a puncture, so both ways. So I could seal the puncture and then do the Rittmeister two moves. Okay? Okay. Okay. So, I don't know, but here is the other point. There are variants. Let's start from the Rittmeister moves. There are actually two different types of Rittmeister moves. There are the Rittmeister moves in which you see a cyclic thing in the center, so where the orientations are such that in the bigon, in the middle of the Rittmeister 2, you see a cyclic thing. So I will call this the cyclic R2. Or R2 cyclic. And there is the version of Rittmeister 2 in which you see an acyclic thing in the middle. But this is the kind of Rittmeister 2 that you will see when you do braid theory. Okay? So I will call this the braid like Rittmeister 2, and if you want, R2B. Okay? And there is a similar thing for Rittmeister 3. So if you look at Rittmeister 3, in fact, it doesn't matter what the over and under information is, but inside you could either see a cyclic thing, so you will have an R3C, and similar, there are the R3s that you could actually see within a braid, so I will call them R3B. Okay? Now, it turns out that there is nothing interesting to say, at least I have nothing interesting to say, if you don't mod out by Rittmeister 2B and Rittmeister 3B. So these I will always take. Always take. However, you could say, what if I don't mod out by Rittmeister 2? What if I don't mod out by the cyclic moves? So I could just, completely at will decide not to mod out by cyclic Rittmeister moves. A few words about, and it's very easy to show, by the way, that in the presence of these moves, these two are equivalent. So if you have one, you have the other. So I'm saying it's optional, but the option is either you take both or you don't take both. Okay?
Sorry, I think you need one of
them. What?
It's cyclic, I think you need one of the strands.
Sorry?
You mean going around?
Cyclic means go around, of course, and I drew it incorrectly. Thank you. Sorry. Okay. Okay? Anyway, why bother? First of all, even before that, why didn't anybody bother about it before? So the answer is sort of weird. Okay? So in fact, why not do the same in ordinary knot theory? Why not? Without virtualization, I mean, just on planar diagrams, why not consider planar diagrams modulo just the braid-like Rittmeister moves? And in fact, there are certain knot invariants for which it is much easier to prove invariance under the braid-like Rademeister move. So, you know, in fact, Chovanov-Rozansky homology, for all I know, well, you can prove invariance under the braid-like Rademeister moves, but not under the cyclic Rademeister moves. So why is it called an invariant of knots? Okay? So for ordinary knots, there is a slightly strange answer. And the slightly strange answer is that every knot is a braid closure, and the moves between braid closures, namely the moves that appear within Markov's theorem, which we saw in Esther's movies, but the moves that we saw in Markov's theorem are always braid-like. So if you have something which is invariant under braid-like Rademeister moves, then you restrict your attention to braid closures, and it's an invariant of knots. And it defines an invariant of arbitrary knots. However, there are many knot diagrams that are not braid closures and are not equivalent to ordinary knots and are not equivalent to braid closures unless you insist on using the cyclic moves. Okay, so it's a slightly odd situation. You have, knot diagrams, knot modulo cyclic moves is actually more than ordinary knots. But the ordinary theory of knots embeds into that as braid closures. Okay, so
and it's a retract.
What?
Ordinary knots is a retract of the other theory.
Ordinary knots, it's a retract, but you need to move in this forbidden or this added, yeah. Anyway, so in fact, Chovanov-Rozansky homology is defined on a knot only by considering it as a braid closure. You cannot... I should say it differently. Chovanov-Rozansky homology is defined for an arbitrary knot diagram. However, if you want an invariant of knots, you have to restrict your attention to braid closures. So, I don't know, it's a bit strange, okay? By the way, an aside about braid closures are a bit inefficient. So again, I like computations. So typically, if you have an n crossing knot diagram, it will be the braid closure of a braid with n squared crossings. And this n is what appears in the exponent. So, you know, if you have something that takes exponential time to compute, then it goes from 2 to the n, or from e to the n, to e to the n squared, which is a disaster. So there is some inefficiency in ordinary knot theory if you forget Rademeister, the cyclic Rademeister moves.
Can you formulate it as the Dyer-Baxter equation?
What?
Which only modulo something smaller set of moves.
The Young-Baxter equation describes only the braid-like moves.
Yes, so can you know and modify of the Young-Baxter equation some other set of equations?
So if you want to have invariance also under the cyclic Rademeister moves, you need more than the Young-Baxter equation. You also need good behavior under changing the orientation of a strand. So it often means having an antipode, depending on your context. It often means having an antipode.
Okay.
So having a formula for how to reverse the orientation of a strand. Okay? I don't know what else to say. But a priori, young Baxter is only about braid-like moves, to Rademeister moves. To get the cyclic Rademeister moves, you need a further property. Or you need further properties. Okay. Now, also, so, often invariants are a little bit more delicate, so you have to somehow multiply by a counter term that is proportional to the rotation number or something. Now, Rademeister 1, you can sort of arguably, it doesn't change the linking number because this is not a crossing, but it does change the rotation number of a planar diagram. Okay? So arguably, if you want invariants that depend on rotation numbers to work, you should not mod out by Rademeister 1 virtual. So another variant is to declare that you don't want to mod out by virtual Rademeister 1. Okay, and there may be other variants, I'm not quite sure. Okay, so, and finally, you know, if I wanted to make stuff more complicated and talk about framed virtual knots or tangles or virtual knotted graphs or whatever, then there will be even more variants. Okay, so therefore, the answer to the question on the first blackboard, what are V-knotted objects, is I don't know. Okay, and in fact, somehow, part of what I'm trying to do is to figure out what is the answer. So, to see what class is it that everything works for, and then declare that that's the right answer. Okay? So, you know, I'm sorry that this might be a somewhat of a disappointing answer, but starting from that answer, I want to tell you about some investigations that we made. So now it's the handout. So the more colorful side of the handout. And I will follow. So the sketch of what I want to do, so maybe you can call it now the combinatorics, the sketch of what I want to do is to say that we chose some 18 classes of possible definitions of virtual knots, and for each of these 18 classes, so really I'm giving you 18 different lectures in parallel, okay? So for each of these 18 classes, we figured out what is the correct space of core diagrams or arrow diagrams, what is the correct notion of finite type invariants. For each of those, we computed the parallel of type n invariants, modulo type n minus 1 invariants. And for each of those, we computed the dimension of the space of weight systems, meaning the parallel of core diagrams modulo 4t relations. And for the case of U-knots, the fact that this is equal to that is a very non-trivial theorem. It's essentially the Koncievich integral. Okay, so we did it for 18 classes of virtual knots and got the answer and by computer and only up to degree 5 in each case, because that's roughly when where computation where we ran out of computing power, and we got the following table of dimensions for those 18 classes, and the table is showing both the dimension of that and the dimension of that. So the dimensions always match. Okay? I think I'm running, the first hour is more or less ending. What?
What is the meaning?
So maybe I should... Well, okay, you know what? I'll explain the meaning of the table and then in the next hour explain how it was derived.
I mean, just what is the meaning of Vasiliev invariance of a virtual?
So the meaning of Vasiliev invariance of a virtual is the usual meaning. So over minus virtual. The same as in... the W case. So over minus a virtual or under minus a virtual. So what I will want to do in the next hour is to tell you what are the corresponding relations and how was this computed. And part of it is just, well, to explain how it was computed and to sort of see the math, okay? But another part is that the relations that will come out will be, I want to introduce them anyway because they're closely related to Libye algebras, and that's actually my main point. So let's take understanding this table also as an excuse for, or as a way to figure out what are the underlying relations, and then we will later see that these relations also arise in have a low algebra side and likely a high algebra as well. So, but as a start, I want to understand how this table was computed. Should I do it right now or after the break? I mean, maybe we should take a break. So after the break, I will explain what are all the entries in this table and how it was computed, and we will see how the relations arise.